From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, June 16th, 2026. State election officials could determine which candidates won three high-profile primary elections as early as tomorrow. They say they're ahead of schedule in preparing for the ranked choice tabulations for the two gubernatorial primaries and the Democratic contest in Maine's 2nd Congressional District. As of late this afternoon, staff had scanned all paper ballots from towns that still hand-count election results and had uploaded the digital images of ballots from other towns. Chief Deputy Secretary of State Catherine McBrien says staff are ensuring that the results uploaded into the computer match what towns reported on election night.
We want to make sure that those numbers match exactly. They can't be off even by one. If they are, then we investigate and we try to figure out what happened.
McBrien says she hopes the ranked choice tabulation will happen tomorrow. Meantime, state elections officials say they plan to hold recounts in three legislative elections next week. In House District 49 in Sagadahoc County, Suzanne Andreessen leads Nicholas Hamlin by less than 10 votes in the Republican primary, according to results compiled by the Bangor Daily News. Meantime, Democrat Lisa Pratt leads Rachel Phipps by less than three dozen votes in House District 135, which includes part of Kennebunk. There will also be a recount in the Democratic primary for Senate District 30, where Sophia Warren leads Eleanor Sato by two dozen votes, according to the BDN. That district encompasses Gorham and part of Scarborough. The Office of Maine Secretary of State says those recounts will occur on Monday and Thursday. Portland police are investigating the death of a pedestrian who was hit by a vehicle this morning. Officials say a 49-year-old man was struck by a vehicle operated by an 82-year-old man at the intersection of Marginal Way and Preble Street shortly before 11:30. They say the pedestrian succumbed to his injuries shortly after he was transported to Maine Medical Center. Police say they're withholding the identity of the man who died pending notification of his next of kin. They're asking anyone who witnessed the crash to contact the Portland Police Department. The Maine Bureau of Highway Safety just last week launched a pedestrian safety campaign in Portland, Lewiston, and Auburn in response to a growing number of fatalities. Portland City Councilors last night rejected a proposal designed to encourage larger nonprofits with tax-exempt property to volunteer payments to the city. Portland Councilor Kate Sykes says the payment in lieu of taxes or pilot proposal was a response to the, quote, ballooning of the nonprofit sector in the city.
What we actually need is to bring nonprofits to the table and to discuss what it is that we need to deliver to the city of Portland, to the residents here who are paying for your businesses to exist in Portland through their property taxes. We need to have that partnership. We don't. Pilot was a pathway to get there.
But many of the largest nonprofits in the city, including Maine Medical Center, say the policy doesn't account for the services they provide to the community. The measure failed by a vote of 7-2. Maine Independent Senator Angus King and several Democratic colleagues have written a letter to federal park officials demanding a halt to work on a triumphal arch President Trump wants to build in the nation's capital. King says the arch project is flat out illegal without approval from Congress, and he cites other objections.
The thing is just a monstrosity in a place, in a really sacred place. It's right between Arlington Cemetery and the Lincoln Memorial, which was designed explicitly over 100 years ago as connecting the North and the South in the wake of the Civil War.
King says the arch's proposed height would also violate limits imposed on all new structures in Washington. King and the other senators are also warning the administration that further work on the arch project could subject individuals involved to criminal penalties. Winter ticks took a heavy toll on young moose this year, disappointing researchers who hoped drought would put a damper on tick populations. Maine State moose biologist Lee Cantar says feeding ticks can weaken and kill moose before they're a year old.
And if they have a heavy tick load and they have a little bit less weight carried on them, They can succumb to it. And we lost 72% of my collared calves by this May.
Dry conditions can harm ticks' eggs and keep the population down. Kantar says warmer winter weather is allowing ticks to thrive and pose a bigger threat to moose. The Portland restaurateur who founded Four Street, Scales, and Street & Company received a James Beard Award in Chicago this week. In his acceptance speech, Dana Street criticized immigration enforcement tactics by the Trump administration, which he says instilled fear in some of his 340 employees.
These people are the best of our people. They're hardworking. They traveled here under duress to make a better life for themselves and for their people they left behind.
Street also thanked the general managers at each of his restaurants and his business partner, Victor Leon, who died a few years ago. Seven other main chefs were semifinalists for this year's Beard Awards. Many school districts across the country face declining enrollment, teacher shortages, and funding uncertainties. For small island communities off the coast of Maine, these challenges can be even more daunting. On an island with fewer than 100 year-round residents, declining enrollment can close a school down and force families to relocate. In the first of a two-part series, Maddie Smith visited the Cranberry Isle schools off the coast of Mount Desert Island.
You can start.
Good morning, Audrey.
Good morning, Ezra.
Every morning, the five students at the Longfellow School on Great Cranberry Island start their day by sitting in a circle and greeting each other over breakfast.
Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning, Miss Ashley.
Good morning, Mr. Ryan.
It's a full-on circle now.
It is.
On this day, the circle includes Yvonne Thomas of the Maine Seacoast Mission, which supports schools on these outer islands.
For year-round island communities, the school is one of the absolute pillars that sort of is linked to a vibrant community, because if you don't have a school, it's hard to have young families.
Residents of Great Cranberry Island know this all too well because their school was closed for more than 15 years. When it reopened a decade ago, students from both Great Cranberry and Islesford began attending each other's schools for 2 years at a time, connected by the island ferry. The agreement is designed to ensure both communities can keep their schools and attract new residents like Cranberry Isles teacher Ashley Greenleaf.
I grew up really rural, and so I was like, I don't want to move to a city. I don't think I would like it. I like small communities.
Greenleaf says while she previously taught fourth grade at an elementary school in Jay, teaching on a rural island for the past 2 years has been a completely different experience.
The planning is a lot more challenging because I have five students who are in five different grades who are reaching or going towards five different standards every single day. So it's a lot more intensive in that regard, whereas like the classroom management is a lot easier. So it's just a lot of give and take, I would say.
Do you want me to pick the problems or do you want to pick the problems?
I want to.
Okay.
I need you to. I'm so confused.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Teaching principal Gloria Del Sandro spends her days managing those multi-age groups in math. On this day, Del Sandro is working with fourth grader Ezra Bunker and Isaiah Alley, a third grader, on some tough word problems involving fractions.
It's super important to be responsive to the kids that you have in front of you, not just their math skills, but their social-emotional needs and their attention spans and their interest levels. And so if something's not working, my first reflection is what do I need to do differently, or how do I need to scaffold this, or where is the hang-up? And so I pivot a lot.
Del Sandro says these strategies work well in small groups, and the individualized attention may actually offer benefits over traditional classrooms. In fact, teacher Ashley Greenleaf says the Cranberry Isles have entered into a contract that would allow mainland students from Mount Desert Island Regional School System to attend school here on the island.
We are a really unique school with really unique access to place-based education and to individualized student support that you can't get in a larger classroom. And so we're really welcoming anybody who thinks that their child would benefit from this.
So far, no one has taken them up on it. But another island school in southern Maine has managed to attract students from the mainland. We'll look at how they've done it in our next story. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
You can hear part two of Maddie's Island School series tomorrow. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, the Ebola outbreak and what's changed since the last one. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.